Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
WTIC, good afternoon. Todd with you on a Friday. You ready to rock this Friday? 860-522-9842. And a good afternoon. Did I say that already? I don't know. Maybe being repetitive. I had a revelation reading the paper today. I was just going through the Hartford Current this morning. I say every story here, every story is all we need. Just the news itself. It suddenly dawned on me, like, one story, it's all there, the contradictions. In other words, I'm always looking for us to find these great insights, these revelations, the smoking guns about what power does and how it does it. And it's in every story that covers the political system. For example, top of the fold in today's Current. Nursing home workers get raises in deal to avoid strike. They get raises in deal to avoid strike. So if you'll recall, on Monday, the governor announced he was making his final offer. Do you remember I told you this was all a ruse? It was a game for the governor to strike a certain pose of being a tough guy who holds the line on costs while he's giving away billions of dollars. It's just wasted. Most of what is spent in the state is just wasted money. And even if it's something going to, if it's spending that is going to something useful and important and appropriate for the government to do, which is a small part of what they spend money on, they have rigged the system in such a way that there is just inordinate spending on any line item. If it should cost a buck, they spend $1.70 on it, or $2.50, or $4, because they want it to be more expensive. They want everything to be more expensive. Why, you say? That's ridiculous, Todd. Why would they want the lawmakers, the people who have to parse that money out so it goes a long way? No, they only want it to go a long way towards their own reelection. And what makes it go a long way to their reelection is to spend it as recklessly as possible. So this special interest groups, through whose hands the money flows, are as happy with them as possible. This is why they never, if you doubt me, tell me why they never cut spending. Tell me why they never scrutinize a budget. Tell me why they never look at a program and say, oh, that's obsolete. It was a good idea 50 years ago, no longer functions. No. Instead, they run around always talking about the need to expand. Okay, so Jolly Ned was posing on Monday. This is my final offer. I'm drawing the line on these nurses. Now, the revelation in this story, it's not that it's new information, but again, it's made crystal clear, as Richard Nixon used to say.
I want to make this crystal clear.
He used to say crystal clear all the time. I like that expression. This story makes crystal clear just how the schemes work. This is the scheme of deceiving you into thinking Jolly Ned is actually doing something. What he spends his time doing is not doing anything to benefit the state of Connecticut or the people who live within it, or pay the taxes, pay the note on the loans he takes out. It's all a scam to divert funds to the voters of Democrats so they can enhance their power. Okay, here's the story. Negotiators reached a deal Thursday evening to avoid a strike at dozens of nursing homes in Connecticut after a late push by Governor Ned Lamont. A late push. What does that mean, a late push? Well, on Monday, he said, final offer. This is my final offer. In other words, I'm playing tough against these nurses, against these nursing home workers, nurses' aides, RNs. This is all I'm giving. And then the beginning of the story. Negotiators reached a deal Thursday evening to avoid a strike at dozens of nursing homes in Connecticut after a late push by Governor Lamont. So on Monday, he's a hardline guy. On Thursday, he's completely collapsed. Workers at 26 skilled nursing facilities around the state had threatened to strike Friday morning over pay and other issues. But now, the agreement brokered by Lamont will bring, what does it bring? Substantial savings to you, a taxpayer, or another kind of substantial? Well, let me just read that sentence. But now the agreement brokered by Lamont will bring substantial raises. Substantial raises, boosting the hourly wages of most nursing home workers to a minimum of $20, and also adding money for insurance, pensions, and wellness programs. Is it not a total conflict of interest to have a wishy-washy fraud governor who cares only about his own power and his own ability to get a good table at the restaurant and be seen and be applauded for being such an important, accomplished man, having been born rich? Is there anything else he cares about? How can you want him to be the guy guarding your money at the same time that he's got a responsibility for making sure that this ridiculous government-controlled system, this rigged system of nursing homes where Medicaid money pays the salaries, and he has to, somehow he's in this role where he gets to leverage. So he doesn't care about the people. He has to pretend to care about the people who pay the bill. That was Monday. Monday was pretending to care about the people who pay the bill. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday were running around behind the scenes trying to figure out what else he could give them to make sure a deal happened. Because he couldn't. Because he cares more about his special interest groups than he does about the people who carry the load in the state. He has to make a deal for them. He has to give them what they want. 860-522-9842. We have a guest booked, Av Harris. He is here. Let us talk with him. Hello, Av.
Hi, Todd. Sorry, I completely spaced on calling you. My fault.
I'm not surprised. You're a busy man.
Yeah, very busy.
So I forget what we were going to talk about.
Well, I mean, it was the column in the Connecticut News Junkie about how the Lamont train is coming down the tracks for 2022, and he's a shoe-in for
re-election. This is a great story. I'm dying to talk about this. Av Harris used to work in the Lamont administration until 5 months ago, 4 months ago, and he was the communications guru for the Department of Public Health. So right on the front lines of the COVID war. And so what was your take on this story that said Lamont is a shoo-in for re-election?
So I think the writer, I think it was Terry Cowgill, he made some decent points, but I fundamentally disagree with his assessment. I don't think that Ned Lamont is a shoo-in for re-election at all. I actually think he has some serious vulnerabilities. And I think that, you know, the governor can be given some decent marks for his handling of the COVID-19 crisis. I think overall Connecticut's done okay.
Yeah, seventh highest death rate is good in your book?
No, I don't think it's good. I don't think anything is good, but I don't think you necessarily lay the blame for a high death rate on the feet of the governor. Everybody was scrambling. We were all scrambling. But I think that, the governor almost should be thankful of the pandemic, because previous to the pandemic hitting Connecticut, if you remember, his approval rating was a lofty 28%. And it's only through the crisis and the governor being on television every day through press conference after press conference after press conference, it elevated his approval rating. So now it's somewhere, the last one I saw was somewhere in the low 50s, mm-hmm. which is not an overwhelming mandate of people. I think people in general kind of approve of the way that he's handled, you know, the crisis. But the governor said something I thought very revealing when he gave an interview just prior to the legislature coming back into session earlier this year. And he kind of said, you know, he basically admitted he likes governing by executive order. He doesn't really like...
Yes, he did. That was a great story.
Right. He doesn't like governing with the legislature and actually doing his job. If things go back to normal, I think Ned Lamont's going to go back to being in trouble.
Well, this is an interesting thing. So if you plot two lines on a graph... Right. How long, because he's working, as most governors are, to keep their emergency powers in place for as long as possible. Now apparently it's going to be indefinite, pushed into July, but really they're thinking 2022, I think, is what the tea leaves say. Is there a risk that when those lines don't cross quick enough, in other words, if he doesn't give power back to the people and restore the democratic systems that are constitutionally mandated in a reasonable amount of time, he really is at risk of some kind of boomerang on his popularity, isn't he?
Well, that's definitely one risk factor, right? And it also depends on how things go.
I'm sorry. I know I just asked a big question, but I have to ask you to hold because... We got started late, and we've got to take a quick break. Av Harris is here, former member of the Lamont administration, talking about why he's not a shoo-in for re-election. Stay with us on WTIC. WTIC. Av Harris is here. And we're talking... Well, Av is a former member of the Lamont administration, Department of Public Health, communications honcho. We're getting analysis in response to a news story on why the governor's reelection bid might not be as easy as people think. So continue, please, Av.
So you asked a good question, which is, if the emergency powers continue for the governor, is there a limit, right? Is there a backlash that might ensue the longer the emergency powers continue? So I don't know exactly what the answer to that is. I think a lot of it depends on how normal do people start to feel? You know, if restaurants and bars open up and we get close to the summertime and the vaccination rates are steadily increasing and people feel like things are getting back to normal again, and there are a lot of places looking to hire people, and, you know, the unemployment numbers come down, then the emergency powers themselves, they matter less, you know, because it doesn't really have too much of an intervening impact on people's lives. The problem, though, is that there are real important decisions to be made within the next month where there are serious disagreements between Lamont, who's looking at his approval rating, and the legislative Democrats about where to balance the budget and how to balance the budget and where to put the priorities, the spending priorities, for the next couple of years. And those things are not going anywhere. Those very controversial issues where there's sometimes not a great choice, where you have a set of bad choices.
Wait a sec, Av. So are you saying that the governor is maintaining the emergency powers as long as possible so he can have more leverage over his own Democrats in the legislature in terms of resolving these fights over taxes? This is all about his reelection.
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the governor wants to come out with a budget and all of the other outstanding issues of the legislative session, right? The session is going to wrap up in about a month. Mm-hmm. And the governor wants to come out of there with the best budget for his own reelection. And that's what he's keeping a focus on. But there is a growing movement among the Democrats who control the General Assembly to try and increase some taxes on the wealthiest 1%. By the way, Lamont is one of those, and so he doesn't like that. And to try to get some of the spending priorities back that everybody committed themselves to a couple of years ago that Lamont has retreated from. And so these are very serious policy differences where Lamont's concern is re-election in 2022. A lot of the legislators have concerns about the, you know, support for public schools in some of their districts.
Well, you have to assume they have concerns about their own re-elections, and they're supposed to be radicals who want to spend us into oblivion.
Legislative districts. So, well, a lot of the legislators are in pretty safe districts for re-election, right? So it's not they're not on the line as much. Some of them are. Some of them are swing districts, but in a lot of the larger urban areas in Connecticut, where they rely on a lot of state support for their public schools, and Lamont has walked back a commitment to greater commitment to funding of public schools over the next 10 years. That's a very serious issue, and the Democrats in the legislature are looking to pay for that with some tax increases on some of the wealthier residents of the state. That's the one thing that Lamont has been consistent about from a policy point of view. He does not want to increase taxes on the wealthy, and you can probably see why. He's opposed to that philosophically. He is among the wealthiest residents of.
But you're making him seem so two-dimensional and self-serving that he would care about his own taxes as wealthy as he is, as much as he never earned that money. He just was gifted it. You don't think he's feeling that that liberal.
Well, it's not that simple. it's not just him personally. It's there are people that he, you know, that he knows that are, you know, in his level of income status, where the super wealthy, the billionaires, and you know, it looks, these are people, a lot of whom are his friends. And they don't like this. They don't like increasing taxes on capital.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that, because that's been my sense, that he loves being a hero of Fairfield County. And that's what drives him. That's where his ego gratification comes from. He actually, I think in his mind, is not from the state of Connecticut, but he's from Greenwich and Fairfield County.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. But that's the whole thing. See, he is walking a tightrope right now. Because the more he stays committed to that, like you said, being the hero of Fairfield County, the more he risks alienating all of the people whose votes he needs in large urban areas in Connecticut in order to win a statewide election. Connecticut, I know it might be shocking to hear, but Connecticut is not that deep blue a state. I would say Connecticut is a fairly moderate
state.
That's
true, yes.
Right? And so, but the problem is for a Democrat to win statewide, for anything, you've got to get big margins coming out of the cities. And there's a serious disappointment right now with Lamont from a lot of people who are civic leaders and legislators from the areas which you need to really run up the numbers.
But hang on a sec. Maybe his people are designing a different run at re-election, which is built on being a Democrat, an old days kind of Democrat who appeals across the aisle and can pull a lot of Republican voters over, a centrist Democrat. And he can, because he's worked hard to set up this polarity between him, those radicals you're talking about who want ever bigger government, no matter how big it gets, versus those who feel uneasy with higher taxes. And he's taking the more moderate stance of let's stop higher taxes. That seems viable, but don't answer yet, because we've got to go to a break. Hopefully you can stay around, because I want to flesh this out further with you. Av Harris is here, former spokesman at the Department of Public Health for the first 2 years of the Lamont administration. We will talk more about it after news on WTIC. Oh, yeah, it's WTIC. And we are fortunate to have Av Harris here and have him staying all around a little bit longer to talk about the governor's re-election opportunities. And what Av Harris has been laying out for us is where exactly the governor's bread is buttered and his attempts to navigate the turf between rational government that might actually care about being fiscally responsible, and the mainstream Democratic Party, which is extreme left-wing, wants bigger spending all the time, wants tax increases all the time, without regard for how much money is coming in. So back to it, Av.
Yes, sir.
Just go for whatever point you want to make.
Yeah, so Lamont, when he campaigned in 2018, campaigned as the businessman who is a progressive. And so he, you know, he was the kind of candidate that a lot of people were happy with because he's a self-funder. He didn't need to raise. And so, you know, I'm a businessman. I know how to get the economy moving again, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. His big legislative push the first year was a complete disaster, was, you know,
tolls,
pushing for tolls.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pandemic hit, you know, and that's, it was the mismanagement of some of those legislative items that really kind of had his approval rating very low. And the signature issue he was known for was something that was extremely unpopular. And his switching on it constantly didn't help him. And that shows somebody who's inexperienced at governing. So then now we go through this pandemic and we're here a year later, but some of these, the issues where he said, hey, I'm a progressive, where people are saying, okay, let's put your money where your mouth is. And he's backing off. He's backing off of, like I said, school funding commitments. The issue of the marijuana legislation is still unresolved, where there are people calling for more directed investment into communities that have been really ravaged by the drug war. That's a big one for progressives. The other one that's also big is the issue of the public option for healthcare, allowing small businesses to buy into health insurance that the state employees have.
Yeah.
He doesn't, you know, he's backing off of that too, and the whole issue of taxing and spending. So what you're left with is basically a governor who, in reality, is governing like a liberal Republican, not really the kind of progressive that people campaigned and worked hard for to get him elected. So that's one vulnerability. But the other thing that is very important always in a governor race is, who is your opposition? Who's on the other side?
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at some of the candidates on the Republican side, I actually think Bob Stefanowski's activity in the last 3 years has gotten him a little bit more seasoned at the game. He was a first-time candidate last time. If he runs again, he'll be much more seasoned. His efforts to distribute masks and PPE during the pandemic, I think, have not been forgotten by people. And I would say this to any Republican running: if a Republican running for governor has a serious agenda for urban centers and actually spends some time campaigning in our cities, then you might be able to get some votes there. You're not going to win the cities, but if you have a serious agenda to lift the cities up and become vehicles of innovation and job creation, then you might have a shot of getting enough votes in the cities to hold down the Democratic margin, and then you're the next governor.
Okay, but let's back up just a little bit before you get on, before we explore the Republican opportunity to exploit the failures of Governor Lamont to do what progressives want him to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have to assume he's got several teams, probably being paid for with tax dollars, who are advising him on his reelection possibilities and how to best strategize it. And why would they not have some mastermind plan here where this is to the governor's benefit? By deliberately not doing what progressives want, he puts himself in a position where he can be a governor who supersedes parties. I don't do what the Democrats want. I don't do what the Republicans want. I do what's best for the people.
Well, I mean, in theory, that could be a good argument, but who's going to vote for you? You know,
what constituency are you representing?
Well, what's your coalition, right? You've got to stitch together a coalition in order to get to the 50% plus one in Connecticut, which is usually about, you know, 550,000 votes, or give or take a few thousand, right? And, you know, is it going to be a high turnout election? There are national trends that also impact,
sure,
you know, the Connecticut voting. Is it going to be a good year for Democrats next year, or is it going to be a good year for Republicans next year? And that could impact the gubernatorial election as well. But the point you're making, I think, is if you assume that all of the people that voted for Lamont last time are going to support him again, and doesn't matter what position he takes on, you know, some of the progressive issues I mentioned, then maybe you're right. But maybe some of those voters say, listen, I thought this guy was going to do X, Y, and Z, and yeah, he had the pandemic, but he's really backed off a lot of the commitments that he made that attracted a lot of young voters or attracted a lot of city dwellers or attracted a lot of people who identify themselves with the kind of Bernie wing of the Democratic Party. And they don't like what they see right now. I see a lot of chatter on social media with people genuinely disappointed in the failure of the governor to live up to the commitments he made. Now, so the problem with your theory is that you might gain some moderate voters and even some Republicans, you know, who look at you and say, yeah, he's a pretty reasonable guy. But you might lose some of the progressive voters you need on the left in order to get you past that number that you need.
And where the energy of the party is. So does that make Ned Lamont, we're talking to Av Harris, who used to work for Ned, does that make the governor vulnerable to a challenge from the left flank? Maybe the Working Families Party doesn't nominate him, but nominates a challenger.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's a realistic scenario. Working Families Party in Connecticut, but most of what they do is they cross-endorse Democrats and give the Democrats some extra oomph.
Yes, but why would they want to give extra oomph to somebody who's betraying the great socialist ideals?
Well, I mean, that would be a question you'd have to ask the Working Families Party, because up until
It doesn't have to be them. I'm just saying you've got a big section of the Democratic Party where the energy of the party is that's looking at this guy and saying, who is he? We've got an imposter governor here, and he's gone back on all his promises. We can't let him get away with this.
Well, you might have a challenge. I think it's highly unlikely, because I think a lot of Democrats are also pragmatic, where they might be disappointed in their governor, but saying, well, you know, he won statewide before, you know, he's our best shot to win. And, you know, it's better to negotiate with him than it would be for a Bob Stefanowski or a Themis Claridis. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think you can actually, there's plenty of history to show that progressive Democrats can negotiate, on budgetary matters with a Republican governor. I've seen it happen before.
Yes, but don't they risk betraying their base themselves? If they're going along with a guy who betrays the base, isn't there a pressure then on left-wingers in the Democratic Party to demonstrate that that's not them? I've got to go out, I would say to myself, if I was a radical, that I'd say I can't allow myself to be aligned with Ned Lamont. That's an embarrassment to the Black Lives Matter movement, to the people who expect money to be spent that doesn't exist on their behalf. How do you go to those people and not be embarrassed?
Well, now what you're talking about, those are exactly the kind of conversations that are happening right now, especially over the next month as we march towards the end of the legislative session, and what happens with these key pieces of legislation that are major priorities for the progressives. You know, sometimes you need a governor's support in order to make it happen, in order to get the votes you need, in order to make something, you know, law. And if the governor doesn't commit to these things and use the power that he has in order to get things over the finish line, and he's more passive and says, well, if you guys want it, you put it on my desk and, you know, I'll sign it. And if he doesn't really commit to these things, I think a lot of people are going to look at this and say, well, you know, this guy isn't really who he said he was. Now, could there be a primary challenge as a result of that kind of disappointment? Maybe there could be. But I doubt it, just because Democrats at the end of the day, even if they're disappointed, a lot of times they just make practical decisions and they say, well, okay, maybe he's not my favorite Democrat, but at least he's a Democrat and I'll vote for him.
Yeah, it just seems like a very feverish atmosphere right now for that kind of conciliatory behavior to wash, that would put people at risk. So back to the Republicans, and I think what you were saying was that if the governor continues on this tack, that leaves him vulnerable to a candidate like Bob Stefanowski working the cities. But what would the message be to the cities? The cities are still going to say, but Bob Stefanowski hasn't torn down any statues.
No, but it's not that. It's not always about tearing down statues. I mean, that's what I think a lot of people on the right get wrong. There are a lot of people who are city residents who are very practical, pragmatic voters. When you talk about lowering taxes. You know, the state has been screwing over the large cities in Connecticut for decades by not keeping the pilot, which is payment in lieu of taxes payments from the mm-hmm. state, up to the level where they need to be. So as a consequence, municipal taxes have gone up. And, you know, the lawmakers in Hartford have consistently over the course of many years taken the money that should have been to reimburse cities for properties that they can't tax, you know, and taken that and spending it on other priorities. So a Republican like Stefanowski can talk about lowering taxes for city residents by fulfilling the commitment that the state should have done by focusing investment on growing industries mm-hmm. and creating jobs, which are conservative ideas, and talk about really increasing the business activity, improving transportation. And these are things that not only help city residents, but a lot of the suburbs around those cities where a lot of people, residents, work in the cities. And so you can do it as a Republican. John Rowland always had good things to say about cities and also had real seriously substantive proposals for an urban agenda. It is not impossible, and it wasn't even that long ago when he did it. Now, if you look at a Republican like Themis Claridis, she could do the same thing as well. And I think she could be a very credible candidate for governor. She's very smart. She knows how to put together an argument, and she's consistent. I think she's being a little bit tagged a bit unfairly, I would say, because she's married to Greg Butler of Eversource, and people hate Eversource right now because of the terrible response to the last major power outage. I don't think it's fair because it's a bit of guilt by association.
Well, except that if funding for her campaign comes from those Eversource dollars, that puts her in a very difficult position, does it not?
Well, I suppose that would be fair game, but I've known Themis Claridis for about 15 years. And I think she's very smart, and it would be dumb to discount her because, especially, look, she'd be a woman candidate running in a year that I think is going to be very good for women candidates. And I think she's got a lot of credibility on issues. She knows what she's talking about in terms of state government. But I think, you know, fairly or unfairly, there's going to be a liability there because of Eversource.
Well, not just Eversource. Eversource drives home the perspective on Themis Claridis that she's the consummate insider, low name recognition, few things to point to that have fixed government. Instead, she's been there while runaway spending has driven the debt up dramatically. And so I don't know.
Well,
I
don't know that that's a fair criticism, because it was Themis Claridis as a Republican leader of the House in combination with Senator Fasano who forced some fiscal discipline onto the budget-making process in 2017 that has resulted in, you know, the highest level of state reserves. They put in things like the volatility cap, you know, to restrict lawmakers from just spending money like drunken sailors whenever they got good revenue reports. And so the fiscal position of the state right now is not necessarily thanks to Governor Lamont. It's thanks to that bipartisan budget that they did to ignore Governor Malloy 4 years ago, and Themis was a part of that.
I'm glad you want to give Republicans credit for that, because I think it's due.
Absolutely.
But they did that because they had the numbers to be able to hold a position. We're talking to Av Harris. Hold on one sec, Av. We'll get our break in, and then we'll wrap up. 860-522-9842. We're talking to Av Harris, who was in the Lamont administration till a few months ago. Stay with us on WTIC. WTIC. Talking to Av Harris, longtime government worker in the state, all different office holders, different levels of governor, but spent the last couple of years with this governor, of the government, with this governor. Wow. 860-522-9842. So, Av, we've just got 2 minutes left. If you want to do a little recap on this for us. The most potent point that you can make about why the governor is not a shoo-in for re-election. What's the key vulnerability?
Well, I think it all depends on people's economic situations and how, do things improve over the next 6 months to a year? Or do people still feel stuck? Don't forget that there have been a lot of people working remotely. Now, when people start to go back and work in the office, we're going to see increased traffic jams. All of the things that we're able to sort of not think about over the last year plus are going to return. You know, the transportation infrastructure problems we have in Connecticut. Taxes are still high. Cost of living is still high. You know, so does the governor have a shot to be reelected? Absolutely. Is his approval rating fairly good for a governor? Yeah, it's not bad, but he's by no means a shoo-in, and I think there are some real vulnerabilities, especially because he's not turning out to be as progressive as he advertised himself to be. And, you know, it depends on how the progressive voters in the Democratic Party react to that and what happens over the next month. And, you know, as the legislative session comes to a close, is going to impact their reaction to that. And it also depends on who the Republican candidate is on the other side. There are a couple of strong ones, as we mentioned. So nothing is guaranteed. I don't think it's a shoo-in at all. And I think the governor has some real vulnerabilities, and he's going to have to make some tough decisions over the next 3 or 4 weeks.
All right, Av Harris, thank you for your time, sir. Interesting to get the analysis, and it was fun talking with you.
Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
All righty. Av Harris, former spokesman for the Department of Public Health under Governor Lamont, and that ended in January. When he was let go from that administration. Interesting stuff, for sure. Because what Av is saying is don't believe the popularity ratings of the governor right now because he is a moderate pretending to represent the needs of the left wing, the energy of the Democratic Party. And there is a risk there that that creates schisms in the governor's support. There's a risk there that Republicans capitalize on it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.